and we host Geek in the Streets,
a podcast where we share knowledge with each other on different geek and nerd topics. So join us for the conversation.
Starting now.
Welcome to Geek in the Streets. I'm Ian.
And I'm Arielle.
And this is a podcast for the geek and the nerd subjects you love as if you are going to cry over CGI characters. And Arielle, what and who are we talking about today?
Today we are going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So spoiler alert is in effect. If you have not seen this movie yet, turn back now. Come back when you're done.
Yes, it is the latest offering from Marvel Studios. So it is very hot in the theaters. Go see it
before you listen. We're giving you a whole month at this point, though. Yeah. You know?
We always do you right.
Yeah, we try. So it was released May 5th, 2023, so about a month ago, and this comes out. Produced by Marvel Studios and Disney, of course, and directed by James Gunn. It had a budget, an approximate or estimated budget of... Is this $250 million?
$250 million.
Is that number?
Yeah.
And it brought in like $118 million in the box office in opening weekend, and currently has done $542 million worldwide so far.
As of this recording.
As of this recording.
Or when the notes were written.
As of when I wrote these notes.
Yeah.
It has a runtime of 2.5 hours, so it's a pretty long movie. You know, it's a pretty long Marvel movie. The cast, we have all the original Guardians of the Galaxy cast members, plus Chakuti Awuji as the High Evolutionary, Maria Bakalova as Cosmo the Space Dog, that's her full title, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will Poulter as Adam Warlock, Linda Cardellini as Lila, that should sound familiar because she also plays Hawkeye's wife, Asim Chaudhary as Tiefs, Michaela Hoover as Floor, that's Ratcatcher 2 from Suicide Squad,
mm-hmm. You
got that one. Elizabeth Debicki is back as Aisha, and then there are some fun, like, I'm going to call them cameo slash pop-ups. From last week's episode, we have Sylvester Stallone, aka Rocky, Stikkar Ogard, Michael Rosenbaum, a personal favorite of the podcast, as Martinex, he's like the diamondy guy,
yep.
Right? Tara Strong as Mainframe, that's the little computer. It was Miley Cyrus in the last time we saw the Ravengers. Jennifer Holland, that's James Gunn's wife. She's like the security guard lady, or like the blonde lady that is in the
planet.
Yeah.
Thingy. Organic planet.
And Judy Greer as Warpig, and I forgot what's his name. From Firefly,
Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion as well.
Yeah, and Judy Greer was also an Ant-Man.
Yeah, but...
So they're double-dipping in this movie.
She plays a CGI... I mean, they're all CGI characters, right. So I think it's fair. A lot of other people, too. It's a pretty big cast. Those are just kind of the main ones. So let's talk about a brief plot. I don't want to get too deep into it. You know, basically, this is the final installation in the Guardians trilogy. You know, we left off where we've added a couple people to the ranks. We lost our original Gamora, you know, was killed by Thanos to get the Soul Stone. And now we have this new 2014 version of Gamora that we met in Endgame, right? Was that Endgame? Yeah. And so it starts off, you can tell right from the beginning it's going to be a different kind of movie. You know, Guardians are heavy, but also pretty funny, a little slapstick. I mean, it is James Gunn. And we kind of get that heavy song right from the get-go. You know, we have Creep by Radiohead, but it's the acoustic version, I believe.
Yeah, it seems Peter Quill is not adjusting so well to the new life without Gamora.
Right, and Rocket also seems pretty sad in the beginning. And then, like, right off the bat, we meet Adam Warlock, who has been teased, and it's one of Ian's favorite characters, so a character we commonly talk about on the podcast.
See our second episode of our podcast ever, if you want to hear about Adam Warlock, or our many when we come back and talk about him in other podcasts, such as Infinity Gauntlet.
Right. So he comes on the scene, and he just starts beating everybody up. You know, he beats everybody up, and he injures Rocket. I feel like I looked away at that part or something. I did not understand how Rocket got injured. But basically, they put that little med pack on him to try to save him, but instead, it causes more damage. And we find that that's because Rocket has, like, an encryption around his heart, kind of.
He's got, like, circuitry inside him that is, like, a fail-safe that if anybody else tries to mess with whatever his programming is, yeah, that they it will self-destruct.
So, basically, this movie is a mission for the rest of the Guardians to try to save Rocket. Rocket is incapacitated. He's on, like, a little life support seat. Machine, and at the same time we're getting flashbacks of oh no, I'm already doing it, of how Rocket was created.
Yes, yeah, so Rocket is down, but he is certainly not out of the movie. You can argue that this kind of brings the thesis that Rocket has been the main character of the Guardians of the Galaxy the whole time.
Right, so we get flashbacks of how he was created by this horrible, horrible villain called the High Evolutionary. And basically his goal is to create the perfect civilization and the perfect species, right?
Right. He seeks creatures that would be highly intelligent and live without violence.
Right. And so he's, you know, doing all these experiments, and Rocket's in a group of experiments on little animals. And he, you know, we see him get plucked as a little tiny baby raccoon and be experimented on.
Well, let's bring that up. We get confirmation that he was in fact a raccoon. And if you've been following the franchise, he always says that he's not a raccoon. Yeah.
Or a trash panda.
Or a trash panda. Or what? A raboon.
But so he is experimented on to be made. He's almost like kind of like a cyborg, you think? Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say that he's been genetically altered as well as physically altered with cybernetics.
His brain's been altered too.
His brain's been altered. It's kind of the mad scientist trope.
Right. And he has, in his horrible existence, he has three friends, and they decide to name themselves. And one is an otter with these little sad robot arms called Lila. One is a walrus with, like, mechanical wheels named Tiefs. And one is a very scary-looking rabbit named Floor. And they kind of, you know, are the side projects of this evolutionary on his journey. But Rocket is a pretty big success, and he's very smart, and he actually helps the High Evolutionary, you know, tweak his own process of making a better species.
Right. So
but then the High Evolutionary gets jealous.
Well, what I was going to say is he kept failing in his experiments that he could make creatures evolve faster, but then when they
really
would
scary mutant
evolve, turtle. They would become violent.
Yeah.
And Rocket figures out, even though without any help, outside help, even though the High Evolutionary can't figure it out, Rocket figures out how to make them nonviolent.
And we also figured out, I mean, we also learned that Rocket picked his own name because he saw a rocket in the sky and he wanted to do that one day.
Yeah.
So we learned how Rocket escapes and the tragedy that befalls Rocket. We're going to save Rocket's story and kind of talk about it all in thoughts and feelings so I can get through it.
Yeah.
And so we're getting these flashbacks, and then we also see, you know, present day, the rest of the Guardians are trying to get this code to save Rocket, you know, to get the encryption off so that they can save him. And they eventually have to track down the High Evolutionary on this planet he's created with these new life forms. But turns out those life forms have evolved to be, you know, violent and have all the downfalls of a society would.
And do you know the name of that planet?
I don't remember.
Counter-Earth.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Counter-Earth. And the planet is remarkably like Earth. So it's not like it's especially violent. It's just like Earth. So if you're in the urban areas.
Well, it depends where you live in Earth, right?
Exactly. There's violence. There's drug dealing. There's all that. So these animal creatures are very Earth-like.
I also thought the animal creatures were really scary looking. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, but they are still being hunted by Adam Warlock. He's been employed, him and his mother, Aisha, have been employed by the High Evolutionary to track them down. They're just trying to save Rocket, and Rocket's, you know, we're getting Rocket's backstory. And then it culminates with, you know, them saving Rocket and then basically trying to save all the new species and lower species that are on
the High Evolutionary's giant ship.
Yeah. And they,
his arc, if you will.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. That's good. Yeah, and so that's just a brief plot. Anything you want to add to the plot part before we, like, break it down?
No, I think that's pretty good. I mean, go see the movie and you'll get the rest of the plot.
Yeah, so let's go straight. Well, actually, you want to take a break and then we'll come back for thoughts and feelings?
Let's take a break.
That's going to be the majority of it.
Yeah. The Geek in the Streets podcast is supported by the Geek in the Streets podcast.
And listeners like you.
Well, not yet. And we are back, and as we always do, it's time to talk about how we feel about this movie.
Yeah, so I have some notes, and then feel free to add Ian or, you know, whatever as we go. The first thing I wanted to talk about was Adam Warlock, because this was a highly anticipated addition to the MCU. We had previously in our Adam Warlock episode, I had picked some casting for you, and I don't remember who you ended up with deciding on. I think Nikolai Coster-Waldau. Yeah, was up there. I think Sam Claflin was up there, wasn't he? I don't know. I don't even remember.
Go listen to our second episode ever. What number is this?
I can tell you who wasn't up there. Oh, yeah. This is like 111, I think. Yeah. I can tell you who wasn't up there, and it was Will Poulter. So,
right.
And I actually, so we were one of those fans, we can admit it, who were like, what? When they announced this casting. And then we were also like, what? When James Gunn was like, oh, he's going to be silly. Remember, he was like, he's going to be a very funny character. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, God. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. You know, it is a running joke with the podcast that I used to think Adam Warlock's name was Adam Wizard. And I when we finished this movie, I said, wow, this really was Adam Wizard, not yep. Adam Warlock. So if nothing against Will Poulter, I think he was working with what he had. You know, I don't think he has the look of Adam Warlock. Don't get me wrong. But I think he was really trying. But I think James Gunn just made him too silly. And it felt like, why was he in this movie? It didn't fit for me. It just felt wasted, you know? Why don't you talk about it? Because you're a bigger fan of him than I am.
Yeah. So when you bring Adam Warlock into the fold, now there's different stages of Adam's career. There's the early stage where he's him. Then there's the him going to counter Earth with the High Evolutionary and getting his name, Adam Warlock, from him, being the Jesus Christ superstar of Counter-Earth. And then there's the post-Jim Starlin, in which he just becomes, you know, one of the most important characters in the Marvel Universe, especially at the tail end of the Bronze Age. And I think that's the version of the character that most people wanted, and the one that, since we had Thanos, to us would make the most sense that we would get. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, they do this kind of what I'm going to call like a very James Gunnian thing to say, Adam Warlock came out half-baked.
Yeah.
Right? And so he's a little bit childish. The second he called the High Evolutionary a phallus and was cut off and thrown into the wall, I knew I wasn't going to enjoy James Gunn's take on Adam mm-hmm. Warlock. Don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of great stuff in this movie. Some of the strongest of all the Guardians franchise in this movie, which we'll get to later. But in terms of Adam Warlock, I think this was kind of, he was kind of done dirty, in my opinion,
yeah.
in this movie. Like when he comes in the beginning and he comes to fight everyone, you get this taste of like, oh, cool. But then it also feels very henchy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I always view Adam as a central figure, not really a hench, but okay, I'll roll with it. And then after that conversation with Aisha chastising him like he's a little kid, and then the High Evolutionary tossing him around, I just really didn't, you know, jump on board there. But okay, Ariel?
I'd like to hold out hope, though, because, you know, he did have some redeeming moments in the end. You know, he did save Quill. He, like, kind of was a little more serious seeming. So, and they said that thing about, you know, people having a second chance. So I'd like to hope that he's...
Yes.
But is this just a one and done thing because there's no more Guardians? I don't know.
But I also felt like, you know, what he was used for in this movie was not necessarily an Adam Warlock character. It was the kind of strongman henchman.
That Marvel's been doing.
Yeah, the strongman henchman who realizes the errors of his way by the end of the movie and joins the team.
Yeah.
And there's no specifically Adam Warlock thing about it.
Yeah.
There should have at least been some sort of tease that he's off the cosmic chessboard, or he has a power that we don't know what it is, or what is that thing in the middle of his forehead? There were so many opportunities that they could have had to give us a level of seriousness with this character, even if they played him goofy for this movie, like, oh, let's say this is his childhood, the next movie would be his adolescence, and then we would get a fully formed Adam Warlock one day. I could be on board with that, but they didn't really set any of that up. To me, again, it was almost what I call the trading card mentality of, like, we need this kind of character in a film, and we've been teasing Adam Warlock, and we didn't use him before, so let's use him here.
Yeah. I did also want to talk a little bit about Nebula and Quill. I told you when we walked out that I was kind of shipping Nebula and Quill instead of Nebula. I mean, it's Quill and Gamora. And Karen Gillian confirmed this as well. I saw an interview with her where she was like, they were talking about it, and she's like, I always like to think, like, in that scene where, you know, they're going, when Gamora's like, it sounds like you want someone more like Nebula, you know? And Quill's like, he picked a beautiful pair with the eyes.
That's so funny.
Karen Gillian was like, I was playing this like Nebula has a little crush on Quill, but she doesn't want to admit it. And that she's like secretly like excited that he said that.
Right. Well, I think that was one of the stronger points in the movie. I'm going to come out, if we're going to talk about Nebula and Quill, let's just talk about Gamora for a little second.
Yeah.
The 2014 Gamora, whatever one that they went with.
She's a jerk.
She's a total jerk. And she, to me, don't like her at all. Yeah. She's not a very likable character at all. And she was rougher than the character that was in the first Guardians movie. She didn't really have any of that, those redeeming qualities. And then at the end, how she's with the Ravagers, like kind of like partying and drinking and stuff. I was just like, I don't know. It didn't feel like the same Gamora. I'm okay with it. Don't get me wrong. But like, that would make me, if I was going to pick someone for Quill, I would definitely choose Nebula now over Gamora.
Well, I made a note that I think I have a theory that, you know, when Nebula and Tony were trapped in space for a while and they were playing the little football game, and like you see when he, like he's fading, she like puts the jacket around him and stuff.
Yes.
I think that her time trapped in space with Tony really humanized her and kind of brought her back to like her, well, whatever race she is or whatever, but, you know, whatever species she is, but back towards humanity instead of being like a cold-blooded cyborg.
Yes.
And I really think she's had a good character arc. I know they call her like the other characters are like, you're so gruff and grumbly, but like, she's really not compared to like what she used to be.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So a much better arc overall for Nebula than Gamora.
Yeah. So it was mentioned, I said this, and then this was also a fan theory, and I think it's been confirmed. At the end of the film, you hear Groot say, I love you guys, and that's not him speaking the common language, that's us being able to understand Groot, because we've spent so much time with him that we're family, just like Gamora learns to understand him again.
Be careful when you say family when you're talking about a Vin Diesel voice character.
True. And, you know, of note, you know, this is new Groot. This is baby Groot. He's not the same as the original Groot. He's Groot's son.
Right.
I don't like the design for this Groot, though. Oh, how he, like, tried to look cute in Jack still. Like, he looks like cute baby Groot, but then Jack, I don't like it.
This is, like, late teenage Groot.
I don't like it. You know? I've never liked
it. Or early 20s Groot.
Okay.
I like it. You know, in this movie, he's powerful, too.
Yeah.
Groot was powerful in the first one, too. But, like, this one, even more so.
Yeah, how he can hide this stuff.
And when he went into kaiju mode, that was cool.
I'm going to skip around in my notes, so just stay with me.
Sure.
So another thing that James Gunn said is, because everyone was like, you said this too, when Quill like is going into space and he gets, you know, frozen, it's like, gee, wouldn't it help if he had his like helmet and his space boots, you know? And Quill, James Gunn was like, he left them behind because he was in such a hurry to leave. And I'm like, that's a cop out, but okay.
Total, like, we just did this because the plot required it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone who ever watched a Guardians movie, it's like, wait, doesn't Peter Quill have that special helmet that, like you know, fits right behind him. His ear? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like,
yeah,
that was kind of a
speaking
oversight.
Of Quill, have you seen the thing where that scene where Nebula is carrying the drunk, passed out Quill in the beginning? Have you seen that? That was this doll,
a body
that's
double,
like a 35-pound doll,
yep,
and it like breathes and everything. And Chris Pratt and James Gunn have both said it just like freaked everybody out all the time.
Yeah.
We want to talk a little bit about Quill while we're on the subject. You
Let's
know,
do it.
His ending of him going back to Earth and like hanging out with his grandpa, like I kind of thought that was silly and I didn't really care for it. And then
you know what?
It says like Peter Quill will return. So I'm curious what that means and where that's going to go.
I was totally okay with it. I know a lot of people didn't like this part in the movie, but you have to imagine a character like Quill. He was kidnapped at such a young age. He assumes he has no family left, all mm-hmm. of that. And he goes around, you know, as Star-Lord, this construction of the man he thinks he should be, trying to save the universe. And when he realizes he's got family and, you know, it's important to him to go back and find out what that family's life like. And even if it's just boring and banal, like, that is something that's important. That would always be important to someone who was abducted as a child. So I was totally on board with that.
I guess. So I want to talk about a couple things I didn't like, and then we'll get into the good things. We'll get the negative out, and then we'll end with the good things, okay? So for me, we have mentioned this many times on the podcast that I am a huge Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack fan. Like,
she listens to them all
volume 1 and 2 all the time in our house are going. I did not care for the music in this movie. I know it was supposed to set a different tone, but even when they were like fighting and they did that Beastie Boys song, like, I get it, you moved into the 90s, but I felt like there are way better choices that they could have made than they did. I mean, the opening up with the acoustic Creep made sense, but like, I didn't like any of the music. I was not into it at all.
You know, for me, it was neither here nor there. It's not like
Guardians is about that.
I know. I could totally understand where you're coming from. It's like, but it's, I've talked about this before. I've never been the biggest, like, let's throw pop songs to set a mood in a movie. So that's just part of what Guardians did. So if I like the song or I don't like the song, it doesn't really make a difference to me because my brain just doesn't. It doesn't need to like a song for it to be like a pop reference. You know what? I don't know if that made much sense the way I said it.
I guess. I also think the pacing was a little bit off in this movie. Like, I was getting a little bit of emotional whiplash, which, you know, when you're laying very heavy things on you, it is good to have a little refresher, but it was like, it'd be like super heavy and then super jokey and then like very emotional and lovey followed by a stupid joke. Like, it was a little too much emotional whiplash, and it was a little bit, the pacing felt a little off for me. You didn't feel that, I don't think, as much as I did, but I was kind of like, okay, wow, it's like a lot of, we're in and out a little bit more than I want to be.
Well, if I was going to say an example of that I think did it worse would be something like Thor Love and Blunder.
I'm not comparing, you know,
it's
to that.
Like cancer, then we're making a joke, and you're like, I don't think so. Yeah. Whereas I think James Gunn did a better job at threading the needle. I felt more continuity, let's say, between the Guardians movies than I did between the Thor movies, mm-hmm. right? At least in terms of tone. So maybe not every joke lands for you, but like, I did feel like this was a continuation of the Guardian style. And I will say, it was more serious than the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Usually is.
No, than the Christmas adventure.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, that was something I was wondering. Because the Christmas adventure, even though we liked it and we had fun with it, it was definitely off the rails.
Yeah.
You know, so I was glad that it was brought back to the movie tone.
I've seen a lot of people complaining about that, about the Christmas special, that, you know, you had to watch it to know some of the things that were going on in this movie. And they're saying, like, that's not fair for people who don't have Disney Plus. You know, I don't know that I really agree with that.
Well, it's like anything. If you want to participate in some sort of fandom, you know, you seek it out.
Yeah.
They don't have to come to you. You got to go to that. That's like saying, I can't afford to go to a movie theater. Well, then you don't get to see it, you know, so...
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Also, I want to talk a little bit about Cosmo the Space Dog. I don't really know much about Cosmo from the comics, but, you know, one of the things that I found interesting was Cosmo in the comics is a male dog. Is he still a golden retriever?
Yeah.
And he's on the Guardians of the she is on the Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Disneyland and everything like that. But James Gunn, you know, when we met Cosmo, did we meet Cosmo in the second one?
You know, it might have been an Easter egg in one in the collector's layer.
It was in the collector's, but we really met Cosmo in the voice. Christmas one, though, right?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Anyways, but Cosmo is a I gotta do it without crying too. I'm gonna be very emotional this episode, so just bear with me. Is a female like Russian dog, like she has a Russian accent, and James Gunn said he made that choice to play tribute. Can you do it? I can't do it. I'm gonna cry.
Yes, to pay tribute to the original dog that was
Laika
that was shot into space by the Russians as an experiment. And of course, that dog did not survive the trip.
No.
So Cosmo is an extension of that, as if one of the experimental dogs did survive the trip and, you know, gained sentience and intelligence and all of that.
And telekinesis.
I think that is a great reason to change the gender of the dog.
Yeah, I think that's, especially with the story.
Can't even say it. So then you know it's a good reason.
I'm gonna have a hard time. But what this movie is about too, like knowing what this movie is about, it's way heavier. So
can we also just reference the whole bad dog thread?
Oh,
was
yeah.
so great in the movie.
I know.
Every single time it's like, take it back.
Yeah, another and that one. Was the thing that she cared most about was him saying that she's not a bad dog.
Yeah.
So let's move into the High Evolutionary then as a villain. You know, we're hot off the tales of Kang as a villain, which we're not going to get too much into right now. But what did you think of the High Evolutionary?
I like the High Evolutionary. I thought this particular story. Now, here's the thing. There are a lot of people I've seen complaining about the High Evolutionary compared to his comic book counterpoint. And I just want to tell people, like, he was never that big in comics. Yeah. Like, they tried to make him big, like a Doom or a Thanos or a Magneto or something like that. But I think for the general readers, it was he never really caught on all that much. Yeah. So the fact that he got screen time at all is pretty cool. And for this particular story, because this was Rocket's story, he was very instrumental to the main story. He was very instrumental to what was going on. He was very much a threat to the Guardians. And the actor who played him, I thought did a very good job. And he definitely played that psychotic, like, mad unhinged, scientist, unhinged. He would say things that were pretty disgusting from, like, a humanity standpoint. And, like, the laugh he did and everything. And you'd be like, dude, how could you be like that? Because he's so obsessed with his own mission, like, completely narcissistic and psychopathic. So I liked him.
I liked that he wasn't, like, you know, lately we've had a lot of compelling villains, which I usually like, that you, like, root for. It was kind of refreshing to have one who you just, like, you're like, nope, no way. Yes. Nothing redeeming in this guy at all. Yeah, besides, you know, not the actor himself, like, the character. It's like, nope, you know, he's just a bad guy. And there, you can't.
The old Red Skull, as I've mentioned in a previous.
Literally, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do think it's funny, too. Everyone is like, everyone's been kind of complaining about how heavy this movie is and how it needs to come with, like, a trigger warning. And I'll admit, like, I cried more in this movie than I've cried in a lot of movies. But, like, it's funny to me that the general public are like that. Because, like, we saw, you know, Thanos snap away half the universe. Like, half of all beings in the entire universe got snapped and killed, basically killed away. But, you know, everyone wants, like, a trigger warning on this movie.
Well, I guess we're going to bring this around now that you said that. Because it's one thing to do it to humans and humanoids. But you start messing with our pets or animals that we see as cute.
And I mean, I can't argue because I cried.
And people have problems.
All right, so we're going to do it, right? Okay.
Do you want me to talk? No, I'm going to try.
Okay. Dear listeners, please bear with me. I'm really trying, but this movie was very emotional and I do get very choked up about it. So let's talk about Rocket's story. You know, I knew from scene one with little tiny raccoon baby, which a little bit of backstory. I did spend a summer at a wildlife rehabilitation center rehabilitating all sorts of wildlife, but especially raccoons. Like, I rehabbed, like, 12 baby raccoons. So
I was hoping when we went there I was going to get to meet a raccoon, but we didn't.
Also, I'm going to just go ahead and say this. I'm going to put a plug here because I feel like I have to do my duty. Do not go out and get a baby raccoon as a pet after watching this movie. They carry a really bad type of worm that will go in your brain and go in your eye and make you blind. They also carry rabies. So don't go touch raccoons in the wild, okay? Like, I was touching these raccoons in a professional setting with
She's a veterinarian.
PPE on, okay? I'm a veterinarian. So I'm not telling anyone to go out and get raccoons. Don't do that. That's how you get rabies or Baylascaris.
What about raboons? Can we get those?
You can get trash pandas. That's fine.
Fine.
All right. So anyway, so I knew the second I saw a little tiny baby Rocket in that cage and I saw that hand going to him, I turned to you and I said, oh, no.
Okay. Let's just point out CGI in this movie for the animals is incredible. It's not good. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you really get the sense of emotions, but it doesn't look like, you know, a human face superimposed on an animal. It looks like that animal, the way our dog looks at us, you know?
So then we get the backstory of Rocket getting made from just a normal baby raccoon to a sentient being. And, oh God, I don't know if I can do it. And that scene where they're testing on him and they're working on him. And then you got to do it. But basically the part where he learns he can talk and he meets the other animals and they go, oh, do you think he can talk? And the only little word that came out of his mouth was hurts. I cried over that for like 48 hours. It ran in my head. Just hurts for like 48 hours. Just hurts. Ugh.
You kind of got through it.
I tried to, but you know, and so I don't know. It was just so vicious. But anyways, and then, you know, Rocket is kind of growing and he has his friends and they are in this terrible, awful environment, but they lean on each other and they support each other and they gave, you know, they picked their own names.
There's an element of like horrible beauty where it's like they're in this terrible situation, but through each other's like goodwill and happiness and wanting to help each other out, they create a beautiful friendship.
Yeah, friendship and love.
And love. And mm-hmm. you see that they, even though they're in these cages, they're living the life.
Yeah, and then boy, that scene when they die and like Lila dies, you know.
Well, let's preface it a little bit.
Oh my God.
Rocket is, you know, figures out a way to make the animals nonviolent, as we've said before. And then the High Evolutionary asks him, well, how did you do that? I didn't program you to do that. You don't. And then he's just talking about it. And he says, well, you know, when I get to Counter-Earth, I can do this. And then the High Evolutionary is like, oh, no, you're not going anywhere.
None of your batch are going anywhere.
You guys are gross, you know? Like, and it's just this completely callous telling this being that's so intelligent it can think
like
of something beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just saying, but yeah, you're not good enough. Ew, gross. I can't believe you even thought that. And Rocket, from that point, knows that he has to escape.
Yeah.
And he's been thinking about this, and he plans. And Rocket, one of his abilities in the movies that's been shown, if you give him technology, he can do something with it.
Yeah.
And so he builds a way out to escape, and he's confronted by the High Evolutionary at this point. And what happens?
The High Evolutionary shoots Lila. Because does she jump in front of him?
No, it's behind him,
actually. Oh, yeah. And so she gets shot, and she dies, and the colors of her vision blur as she dies, and she thinks it's a sky. And then Rocket attacks the High Evolutionary. Two more people come, like guards. Rocket kills them, but they kill Teefs and Floor as well.
So all of Rocket's friends are dead.
And Rocket has to escape by himself.
Rocket, in
that's how he got
extremely
out.
Emotional, you don't find this out to the end of the movie, attacks the High Evolutionary, and he actually rips his face off.
That's what a raccoon would really do to you.
Which is, I loved that scene in the movie. Just the rage displayed was so well done.
Yeah, so that part was really beautiful. And then the part when, like, Rocket's fading and he is dying and he goes into, like, the little afterlife and he sees his friends. That part was super sad.
By the way,
I can't even do it. I'm sorry.
To me,
really
that
tried.
Was kind of a callback to when Adam Warlock died. He went to Soul mm-hmm. World and met his friends again.
Yeah.
That kind of, to me, almost could have been like an Adam Warlocky thing that they. I'm meeting them more than halfway here.
I knew when he asked and he was like, you know, can I go with you? And she was like, yes. I knew she was going to be like, but not yet, you know, and he was going to get back. But the part that really got me, so obviously I cried in all those parts.
The part that this whole thing got you.
I cried this whole movie. I like left feeling like dehydrated. I cried so much. But the part too, when Rocket goes back in the end and they're all the baby raccoons and he saves them and he sees, like, he confirms, you know, it says
raccoons from Earth. Pisonis
or whatever, however you say the species name for them. And so he rescues them all and then. You know, they fight the High Evolutionary, they win, and they're like, we got to get out of here. And Rock is like, we have to save them all. And they're like, no, we said, you know, just intelligent beings. And he's like, I'm not leaving them behind. That part was really hard. So, you know, as I said, I am a veterinarian. So this movie, as like the main theme being, you know, taking care of creatures that are not seen as intelligent or like the lower life forms and taking care of animals, was really heavy for me, and it really, like, it made me feel very seen and very heard as someone who's devoted their whole life to this, you know, to saving animals, rescuing animals. I mean, PETA, who I don't see eye to eye with on everything, said this is the most influential and important movie for, like, animal rights advocates that there ever has been. I mean, all the animals were CGI, so, you know, no trained animals or anything on set. But that was a big part that I took out of it, and it was just that message of, like, you know, Rocket is a higher being now, but where he came from, he wanted to go back and save those other creatures, you know, that couldn't save themselves. Everyone else was worried about, like, the humanoid creatures, but Rocket was like, we need to save them all. And there's this one line that I always loved in Harry Potter, too. It was in reference to, I think Dumbledore said it, and it's in reference to talking about house elves, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it's basically like you can tell a lot about a person by how they treat those that are seen as inferior to them, or, like, you know, basically, you know, how you treat the species that can't help themselves. Like, for me, I always know, like, if you don't like cats and you don't like dogs and you don't like animals, like, you're probably not a good person. And sorry if that's you, but that's a big marker for me, is people who, like, you know, are mean to dogs and cats or whatever, or kick animals, or, you know, those are bad people in my opinion.
Right. And I think this movie, you know, if they're called the Guardians of the Galaxy, for Rocket to step up into more of a leadership role and say, no, we're doing this. And it gives the name more credence, because we're not just guarding, you know, people. Mm-hmm. We're guarding everyone. Guarding the galaxy, which means animals, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, by the end of the movie, you do see officially when Quill leaves, Rocket pick up the leadership mantle of the Guardians of the Galaxy, thus cementing.
Then he kills all those animals in the end.
Which is a little weird.
They do say, like, don't you feel bad? And he's like, well, someone has to protect these. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, because, you know, being a guardian, shades of gray.
Yeah.
But you do get the sense that, you know, this franchise was Rocket's all along.
Well, Lila said, wasn't it Lila, when he sees her in the afterworld, she says, didn't you know this was your story all along, or something like that? Or something like that, she says.
Yeah.
It's been your story all along.
Yeah.
And so we learn, you know, you've always thought it's Quill's story, but really, this was Rocket's story the whole time.
I've always said that in these movies that Rocket was
my
favorite.
We have always said Rocket's the heart of the movie, especially Volume 2. Rocket's so big in Volume 2. Mm-hmm. Is Rocket your favorite Guardian?
From the movies, it's a very close between him and Quill. Because I love Quill's comedy. I think, you know, only Chris Pratt can really pull that off. But I just got to hand it to Rocket.
Rocket's my favorite for sure. And then if I had to say number two, I would have said Gamora, not 2014 Gamora, but I would have said previous Gamora. Now, if you ask me, like, of the current ones, you know, in this movie, like when we start out in this movie, Rocket number one. And then I'd probably say, I don't know.
Quill.
No. Nebula, maybe.
Oh, because you're still mad at Quill about Infinity War?
No, I like Quill, but I wouldn't say he's like my favorite. Whenever I think of Quill, the number one thing that pops into my brain is Rhodey during Endgame when he's like, so he's an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think of Quill too. He is an idiot. I mean, I like Quill, and I like Chris Pratt. I have nothing against Chris Pratt. I know a lot of people out there do, but no, I've always liked I loved Baby Groot when he was Baby Groot, except for when I met Baby Yoda.
I was always lukewarm on Groot.
I never cared for like Big Groot. I like Drax, and then Drax, like movie one, I would have said Drax, and then Drax slowly devolved for me.
Yes.
You know, he turned into just a big joke.
Well, notice
same
how
with Mantis too.
Yeah. I was never big on Mantis.
Actually, you know who was a surprising addition that I really liked? I don't, Kraglin, Sean Gunn's character.
I really liked him.
I liked his journey of learning to use the pen. I liked how Yondu showed up, because I love Yondu.
Yeah.
I liked how he showed up to guide him and say, like, you got it. I really liked the interaction with him and Cosmo. I actually thought those two
that
were really
arc.
Great additions to the stories, too. I thought it was cool how nowhere the whole head kind of is like a ship now.
Yeah.
I think I would have said, like, Rocket, Gamora, then Quill, but things were different this story, obviously.
Well, notice I didn't say Adam Warlock was my favorite, which he should have been. He should have been a shoo-in. And we should say that by the end, Adam does redeem himself. He saves Quill, you know, and joins the Guardians. But that being said, again, for Adam, completely wasted opportunity for me.
I actually feel like Nebula was my favorite this movie, besides Rocket, because, you know, Rocket is mainly through flashbacks, because she was kind of like Hermione in this movie. Like, nothing would have happened without Nebula.
Totally.
And we would not have gotten where we did without Nebula, basically.
You know what? There was one very good Star-Lord moment. You know when they were on that
when
organic
planet? When
you
said the F-word?
Oh, yeah. First of all, first F-bomb in a Marvel movie. We're not going to drop it here, though.
You know, technically, Groot said an F word. We just didn't know it because it was in Groot language.
Oh, that's true.
When Groot says to Yondu.
Hey, watch that. Yeah, I remember.
Oh, yeah, but he also says, like, Groot says to Yondu, and Rocket translates it, and he says, welcome to the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy, but he didn't say freaking.
Yeah. Oh, okay, and there was also in the second one when...
Yeah, he's like, watch your language.
Yeah.
Sorry, but go on. That planet was gross, by the way.
So, but when Quill convinces that one tech, you know, you just let me talk to them and we can talk to them. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. Like, once he tricks her.
Yeah.
That was such a good Star-Lord.
Yeah, that was old school Star-Lord, which I missed a little bit. I didn't like that bio planet. I thought it was gross. Marvel's been doing that a lot. Like, they did that with Ant-Man 2, the whole,
like,
gooey crap.
And
I don't like the gooey stuff.
In these movies lately.
Yeah.
So.
Not for me.
Just a thing.
anything else you want to say about the movie?
If like I was going any to
thoughts and feelings. Well, I want to do a couple more things, but any more general things?
Well, yeah, my general thing is, even though I had my misgivings with certain Adam Warlock shaped characters, I thought overall I really enjoyed the movie. And any movie that makes you feel these kinds of emotions, like you can barely talk about it without crying, is a complete success in my book. There's a lot of people, that say, hey, you know, the first CGI character to make me cry was Caesar in Planet of the Apes. Coming in the future, by the way.
I think we're the only people who say that.
No, one of my friends says it.
Oh, yeah. So. I will say, so, like you said, I cry over a lot of CGI animals, but the only other one I've, like, really, really cried that this much about was Caesar from Planet of the Apes.
Right. So, we will be doing a podcast next season.
You know, I want to say real quick, shout out to Bradley Cooper, because when I first saw the first Guardians, I had no clue it was Bradley Cooper, but, like, he really puts his heart and soul into Rocket. Like, you could really just, like, you know, check out and just cash your checks and be a voice. But, like, he really, really made Rocket the character he is. So, like, huge shout out to Bradley Cooper.
100%. Completely agree. Amazing job.
Yeah. I love his character. And I am glad it is Rocket's story. I've always loved Rocket. Most of my favorite, like, a lot of my favorite scenes have been with Rocket. Also, speaking of Rocket conspiracies, I saw someone on the internet say, you know, is that why Rocket's always had such an affinity for prosthetic arms and stuff? Because it reminds him of his friends. And James Gunn kind of confirmed it.
Ooh, I like that. That's a great idea.
Because, you know, he's always like, give me that guy's leg. I want Bucky's arm, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so, okay. But anything else you want to say in general?
No,
okay.
I'm good.
So let me ask you. So I will say, you know, what are your final thoughts on the movie? Like, for me, I do like this movie. It's not, you know, top five Marvel movie I've ever seen by any means, but it's a lot more, I like it a lot more than I've liked some of the recent things they've put out. It did make me very, it made me feel a lot of things, and it was a good movie to go to. It didn't feel like 2.5 hours that dragged. Like, I really liked it, and I feel positive about it. How about, you know, summarize your feelings?
Yeah, completely agree. I would say this phase of Marvel, I would say Spider-Man No Way Home, number one, Guardians of the Galaxy, volume 3, number two. You know, there are some issues I definitely have with the movie, but that being said, I thought it was a great movie, really enjoyed it, would definitely watch it again and again and again. That's how I kind of can tell if I really enjoyed a movie, if I go, oh, I look forward to watching that again sometime. Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know. I need like to watch it at home though, so I can cry.
With no one around.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this. What is your favorite of, I guess you could say four if you want to include the holiday special, but what's your favorite of the Guardians installations now that they're done?
I might have to go with number one.
Okay. For me, it's two. I am a big two fan.
Yeah.
Closely followed by number one. Three is great, too. I mean, they're all good. I will say I'm very sad that they're done. I always felt like I love the Avengers, don't get me wrong, but the Guardians were kind of like, you said those two, they're kind of my team. Like, I love Guardians.
Yeah.
They, like, walked on water for me. I loved every single minute of every one of the movies, you know? So I'm really sad to see them go. It'll be, I'm sad of seeing all my favorite characters go in Marvel, honestly, but I am really sad to see them go.
Yeah, and they were such an unexpected hit, and I think that's what made it so fun. But one thing that I'm not appreciating is now that Guardians is over and James Gunn is in charge of DC, all we're seeing is people asking Guardians actors, you know, are you going to be in DC? Mm-hmm. Who are you going to be in DC? Or the implications is like, do you think Chris Pratt is going to be Superman? Do you think he's going to be Booster Gold? And it's just like this myopic look of all of DC through the Guardians of the Galaxy lens.
Yeah.
And come on, people, let's give that a rest.
Do you think, I wonder, because, you know, at the end it said Peter Quill will be back, but it doesn't say anyone else will. I mean, what are they going to do with Quill? I wonder if he'll be involved in, like, Secret Wars or Secret Invasion.
Yeah, I think Chris Pratt will be back he's as on Earth, Peter so Quill, and he'll be Star-Lord again and all of that. So, yeah, totally.
Wait, did it say Star-Lord or did it say Peter Quill?
I think it said Star-Lord.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if he, because he's, now that he's on Earth, maybe he'll be involved
in
Secret.
Didn't it say, like, the Spectacular Star-Lord? It had some adjectives. Some very remember. Marvel adjective. I could be making that
but
up.
But I'm just wondering if he's going to be a part of Secret War or Secret Invasion, you know, now that he's back on Earth. I would like some more Guardian stuff, but I get it. We're probably done.
Yeah, I'm okay with this particular
with
version
I like.
And team being over. I'm totally okay with it because I thought it was well done. It was very internally consistent. And, you know, by the end, we had the finishing off of this story.
It ended now, on a high note, too.
Yes. If they want to pick up with another version of Guardians or something, maybe with some of the same members, some different ones. I'm cool with that too.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I'm okay with this being the end of that one. I'm not going to be like how everybody else is, like, oh, let's bring Tony Stark back and blah, blah, blah.
You know,
I'm not going to be like, let's bring this team back. I think it's had its story and it's done.
I got to be honest though.
Okay.
I got to be honest. I'm saying it here on the podcast first. Not excited about any of the upcoming Marvel projects. I'm not yet. I mean, I'm hopeful for Fantastic Four, but I'm also kind of worried with some of the things that I've seen, some of the rumors, but like, not, there's nothing on the horizon that grabs me right now.
Where you are is, I think, the fear that Marvel has right now, where mm-hmm. everybody is, because I think what you're saying is the common feeling.
Yeah.
Guardians kind of rounded out the thing that you were, oh, super excited. Everything else from here on out is a gamble.
Yeah.
There's no sure things anymore. It's not like, well, at least we have the Guardians movie. If the Marvels movie doesn't work out, there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, everything else is going to be new territory.
I'm kind of excluding some of the Disney Plus stuff because, like, I am excited for, like, Loki season 2 and Daredevil, but, like, movie-wise, nothing on the slate that I'm really, really super excited for.
Well, I can't be excited for Fantastic Four or X-Men or anything like that until they start making definitive decisions.
Do you believe it with Adam Driver? You think that's true?
I don't know.
I just hope what's not true is the thing about Mila Kunis being the thing. I didn't mean to do that. But about her being the thing.
Yeah.
That is, I don't see in any world how that's going to work. And I hope that's just the rumor mill, but
I'm hoping that Marvel chooses a very classic approach.
They won't.
But they won't. Yeah, so we'll be here to podcast about
that. You
know what
was one thing I also found refreshing about this movie? And this is probably going to get a little bit of hate. But it was closing the chapter, which is hard. But I didn't have to sit there and watch them hand the baton to some rando. Like, the baton got handed to Rocket, who's been the right-hand man, arguably the right-hand man to Quill the whole time. Some would say he's kind of the secret leader anyways, you know, the main real leader. But I didn't have to sit there and watch them hand off the baton to some random person that I don't really care about. And I enjoyed that.
Well, that's good.
It was refreshing.
If I was going to say, a little bit of a tougher year for me. Did not love the Submariner in Wakanda Forever. Did not love Adam characters. Warlock. These were two of my characters that were like off to the side favorite for me, you know, not down the middle. And I didn't really approve. Not approve, I should say. I didn't really.
But they didn't pass the baton to Adam Warlock.
It made me think of that. Yeah. Like, oh, man. So
I mean, they did add that one random girl to the cast of the Guardians at the end.
That's fine.
The child girl.
But again, I'm okay with the team changing and stuff. I'm totally fine with that. Yeah. It's more like I just thought of it selfishly from those two characters. And I was like, oh, man.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we've been the nerd and now you're in the herd about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It's been a fun ride and we'll miss that team.
We sure will.
The Geek in the Streets podcast can be found on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Find us.
Now.